functioning governing bodies and persons with the necessary skills to conduct interview processes. And then most of the members of such governing bodies do not know what's required of a principal, a deputy principal, or the head of a department at the school, the provincial department official will therefore, in terms of the proposed amendment, undertake this responsibility. Then clause 10 also allows the reasonable use under fair conditions of the facilities of a public school for education-related activities and states that the school in question cannot charge a fee or tariff for such use of facility. The last part is the amendment. Currently, the SASSA provides that the facilities of a school may be used for reasonable use under fair conditions. So that's the only amendment to that clause. Then clause 11 gives the HOD the power to centrifuge identified learning support material after he or she has consulted with the governing body. The amendment is proposed in order to bring about economies of scale. And an implication for schools is that learner support material will be purchased more efficiently and less money will be wasted. Then clause 12 is a technical amendment. It empowers the HOD to withdraw one or more functions of a governing body and not only a function as the section currently reads. Then clause 13 is also a technical amendment. It amends section 25 of the SASSA. And it makes a distinction between where the governing body ceases to perform its functions and where it fails to perform its functions so that the act, the provision of the act can read better and to eliminate legal uncertainty about this particular clause. Then clause 14 contains an expansion of the provision of section 26, which deals with the recusal of members of a governing body. It provides that the governing body member must declare a direct or personal interest that he or she has in the procurement of goods and services for the school. And it also provides for a sanction if such governing body doesn't comply with the provision. And the purpose really behind this is to promote good governance, prevent corruption. Then clause 15 clarifies section 27, which provides that governing body members are not entitled to be remunerated. That is the provision currently in the Act. The only amendment here is that the governing body member may not be remunerated for attending meetings or school activities. A governing body member may still be reimbursed for necessary expenses. Then clause 16, only a parent member of a governing body who is not employed at the school may serve as the chairperson of the finance committee of the school, and the purpose behind this is also to promote good governance. Then clause 17 is a technical amendment. The word minor is changed for learner, and that is to bring the SASSA in line with the Children's Act. In terms of the Children's Act, the age of majority is now 18 and not 21. So you may have a learner who is 19, and then that learner will not be a minor. So that's why the word learner is there, not minor. Then clause 18, amend section 33 of the of South African Schools Act, which deals with the closure of schools. It provides for less stringent procedures where there are no learners at the school, where the school technically is only there in name, and also where you have less than 135 learners. Now, that 135 is a school with learners under 135 is deemed a small school, so it provides for less stringent procedures. Clause 19, amend section 36 of the of the South African Schools Act, and the only amendment there is that the word lease is also added there. You'll recall that in terms of this provision, school governing body must apply to the HOD to obtain a loan. The lease is also now added, and the purpose really behind this is to provide for checks and balances in spending of public schools, which are needed, because it is the provincial education department that will have to take the responsibility. The school should not default on a loan. There's also the definition of loan is also amended to provide for or to exclude your day-to-day expenses of school, such as your telephone accounts. Currently, the interpretation of loan, you can include things like purchasing of stationery, telephone accounts, can be it can be defined as a loan. So this is just to make that clear, to exclude your day-to-day expenses. This is just a technical amendment. The word directions is replaced by the word directives. Then clause 21 provides that where there is a substantial deviation from the budget of a school, the parents must be consulted, and there must be a meeting with a quorum of 15%. This is also for your ordinary meetings, that there must be a quorum of 15%. Currently, you can have a meeting of a school governing body where you can have one member to approve a budget. This is to provide for a quorum of 15%. Then clause 22 clarifies what documentation the SGB should consider when a parent applies for exemption. Currently, the practice is that some SGBs require from parents to provide things such as title deeds and all kinds of documents. So the bill, it specifies in the bill what documents a parent must submit to the SGB when he or she applies for school fee exemption. And also, then clause 23, amends section 43, this empowers the HOD to authorize officers to conduct an investigation into the financial affairs of a public school, so the purpose, and also to request the Audit General to undertake an audit of the records and financial statements of a public school. The purpose behind this really is to prevent corruption and fraud and to promote good governance. Then clause 24 contains provision that an independent school must submit to the HOD quarterly reports on all income and expenditure. These are only independent schools that receive a subsidy from the department, and the purpose behind this is also to promote good governance and to protect the financial interests of the state. Then clause 25, this contains an amendment to the current section 51. It contains a number of technical amendments and to clarify procedures regarding home education. Then clause 26, this contains a correction to the present wording of section 59, creating an offence where a parent of a learner or any person submits false or misleading information. And this amendment aims to provide to prevent corruption. Then clause 27 provides for a dispute resolution mechanism in the event of any dispute between the HOD and a governing body, and for steps to be taken during the dispute resolution process. And the purpose behind this really is to try to minimize litigation between public schools and governing body associations. So there's a procedure that must be applied in terms of this provision before a governing body can take a public school to court. Then clause 28 contains an amendment to section 60 to exclude liability of the state if the provisions of section 36(2) have not been complied with. Section 36(2) deals with application to the HOD if a governing body wants to obtain a loan. The governing body must apply to the HOD for permission. So if that didn't happen, then the state is not liable for any default on the part of a public school on that loan. Then clause 29 extends the power of the minister to make regulations on various matters that will improve the education system. So I will now turn to the discussion on the EEA. The bill contains amendments to the EEA that deals mostly with the deletion of obsolete provisions, such as adult basic education center. Adult basic education is now a function of the Department of Higher Education, as well as further education and training. So those clauses are amended. Then clause 40 provides that educators may not conduct business with the state or be directors of companies conducting business with the state, as well as a provision that says that it's an offense for an educator to contravene this provision and constitute serious misconduct. This amendment aims to promote good governance and to prevent and to bring the EEA in line with the Public Administration Management Act. I was informed that this act is not yet in operation, but the purpose is really just to bring the EEA in line with the PAM. Then clause 41, in terms of this provision, educators must in the prescribed manner disclose to the HOD their financial interest. Again, this provision is to bring the EEA in line with the PAM, the Public Administration Management Act. Then clause 42 extends the power of the minister to make regulations on norms and standards for district staffing. Then clause 46 contains the short title. Then the department consulted all provincial education departments as well as the heads of education department and the Council of Education Ministers. All of these structures approved the bill for public comment. It was also approved by Cabinet for public comment. The department also briefed numerous organizations such as school governing body associations and unions. Some of the organizations provided the department with written comments, and some of the comments expressed concern about some of the proposed amendments. Then also there was a socioeconomic impact assessment done by the Department of done by the DPME. The bill was also approved by the Office of the Chief State Law Advisors. And the bill is in line with objectives of the NDP, the action plan to 2019, towards the realization of schooling 2030. And it's recommended that the proposed amendments to the bill, the rationale and applications, be discussed by the Portfolio Committee on Basic Education for further guidance and advice. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for that. I really believe it did much we needed to hear, so that even when we go to the act ourselves, to the SASAP, we read in accordance with the proposed amendments that the department is coming up with for us as we prepare for our process to begin next year. I wouldn't stop honorable members to engage on the presentation, the brief that you have got, bearing in mind that it's not yet our process. We are still going to be engaging on the process as the portfolio committee, but for us to prepare for that, because it's preparing us as members, it prepares even our researchers to do their work well, also even preparing the public, having understood what is it that the department is coming up with, so that as we get into that process, at least we have got a common understanding and we know exactly what is it that we'll be engaging on, even on those public hearings. I'm sorry, Honourable Dudley, we've been missing you so much in this committee. Thank you very much that you are. Thank you very much that you are with us today. Let me open up then, Honourable Members, if ever there are questions or comments that you want to have on the briefing that we have just received, so that we can entertain that one then. Honourable Ollis, your hand has been up for you, the first one. Honourable Dudley, Honourable Costa, Honourable Machesi, Honourable Mkoto, Honourable Nguni, let me take those hands. Now, I'll start with you, Honourable Alex.
Thanks, Chair. Let me place on record again my absolute objection to the fact that we're talking about the introduction of a new bill without the presence of the Minister. I believe that this committee should, in the new year, arrange another meeting to discuss this matter, and that we arrange our diary to suit the Minister, because clearly the Minister's diary does not suit the committee's schedule. We can't consider such an important bill without the Minister. So I'm really unhappy about the fact that she's not here, and you force me, by not having the Minister here, to address my political questions to the Director General, and he's not a politician, and that is hugely problematic. So I really want to register my concern about that. Secondly, my question to the DG then, DG, you made a comment about the unprecedented number of inputs you've received, and I believe you. It sounds like there's been an avalanche, and you're going to have a long process processing all those inputs. I understand the Minister turned down the request for an extension of the period for inputs because there was such an avalanche and there's just too many to deal with. That was what she said to the one request for an extension. But that's not my question. The reason you're getting such an avalanche is because you're tampering with the democratic rights of parents with this bill. And this is a question which I do need to address to the Minister. But that's why you're getting such an avalanche. What concerns me is that you talked about processing the inputs that you received. You didn't talk about considering amendments to the draft bill. In fact, the words you used, DG, were that you now need to have probably some public hearings to educate the public. See, the underlying assumption that you're making is that the public are uninformed, that the public don't understand your bill, and you've got to now educate the public until they agree with you. That's the tone that I'm getting from you. That's hugely offensive. It implies the public are stupid and that you've now got to convince them to accept your bill. In the normal process, when you draft and table amendments, it's common practice to listen to the public, to take the public's comments seriously, and then to make amendments to your bill. I'd like you to actually use the word amendment or change or alteration or some word like that to show that you are taking the public's input seriously, not that you're going to have to now educate the public until they agree with you. I really don't think that that's the right way to approach amendments. The public do have a right to be heard, but then not to be dismissed. Some things in that bill are going to have to be amended. And I'll give you a case in point, just one case, and then I'm done, Chairperson. And the case is, a court case arose out of it. It's the case of Johnson versus the HOD of education in the Northern Cape. Here was the case of a Mr. Kutsia, who had a sexual liaison with a learner in a particular school. He was then dismissed. The HOD overruled a process that the governing body had to choose a school principal for the very school in which this Mr. Kutsia impregnated the learner. And the HOD of education in the Northern Cape then appointed Mr. Kutsia as the headmaster of the very school where he impregnated a learner at that school. And the court says, in paragraph 30 of the judgment, Kutsia was found guilty of misconduct and dismissed for having a sexual relationship with a learner at the very school whom he rendered pregnant. The approach by Kutsia, the HOD, and the school governing body in explaining Kutsia's behavior is disturbing. It smacks of an attempt to defend the defenseless, alternatively explaining it away nonchalantly. Now let me explain to you what one of the major problems is with your draft bill. you want to take away the rights of the school governing body and give them to the HOD. And we here have one case, and there are quite a lot of others, where the HOD does not behave objectively, where the HOD is prepared to appoint a school teacher who has committed a sexual crime to become the school headmaster of the very school in which he committed that crime. And that's what your bill seeks to do. To say, no, no, school governing body, we'll take over the rights to appoint headmasters, etc., etc., etc. That's the problem with your bill, one of the problems. There are several others. And that's why you're getting this huge outcry. People don't actually trust the HOD as an individual. Because here's the Northern Cape HOD, who I assume is still the Northern Cape HOD. But this bill seeks to take the rights away from the school governing body. This school governing body had to go to court to stop the HOD. And the court ruled in their favor. And the court ruled that the behavior of this HOD was not acceptable, that he didn't take cognizance of the fact that this particular person he was appointing as the headmaster had committed a sexual crime at that very school. That is why you're getting this public outcry. These events are shocking. And the HOD, on their own, should not usurp the rights of the school governing body. My question is around taking the public's input seriously, Chairperson. I want to know that the public are not going to be educated out of their opinions, but that the public's opinions are going to be taken seriously, and that the department is prepared to consider amendments to their bill, that they're not going to just say, well, the public are wrong. All 55 million of us, public, are wrong. I want to know that the department's going to take those inputs seriously. That's my only question. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ollis. Honorable Ollis. Of which from your question, I think that is exactly why, before the bill is finally adopted and drafted, it also has to come to us as federal representatives so that we can have a say to safeguard exactly what you are saying as a question. I'm in no way that I'm saying they shouldn't respond to your question, but I want to say at least these processes can run like that so that we make sure that such things do not happen. And I think you're a little bit skeptical of that, but yeah, we'll have to also put our effort in doing that. Honourable Dudley.
I'm sorry if I sound emotional. I believe passionately in this concern.
No, it's fine.
It's not personal. I'm worked up because I'm concerned about the public view.
Thank you. Honourable Dudley.
Thank you so much. I want to say well done for having the pre-official sort of briefing. It does help in the right direction and can't proceed. But what's not clear for me is obviously this avalanche of inputs that you've received. To what degree have you processed those, and are they impacting what you've given us today in any way, or is that still to come? So just to be clear in terms of what impacts that response has had on what you've put before us today. Obviously, we've got to be careful because, as Honourable Ollis has said, this could be a constitutional challenge. We don't have the money, the public funds, to squander in terms of having constitutional challenges to bills. And we remember that CTOP amendment that the court sent back, because not only was there not an in-depth enough public process, but actually what they said was that there appeared to be no serious attempt to look at what the import was and actually see if that needed to be attended to. So we have to be very careful around this, because we don't have the time, firstly, for constitutional challenges, and secondly, we don't have the money. Then the rights of parents are looking to be seriously undermined in a lot of areas. And the question that I would have is, surely we should be looking more at intervention only where there's incapacity special measures for special circumstances, rather than because a school can't do a certain job or doesn't have the capacity, then we pretend that the whole country doesn't have that capacity. So I would like us to look a little more carefully at trying to deal with individual problems rather than painting everybody with the same brush. And, you know, things like payment for positions it's concerned people terribly, and parents do feel, a majority of parents feel that they want to protect their own interests in terms of their children and the education of their children. And these kind of things make people feel very uneasy. So we do want to make sure that we are rather erring on the side of reassuring parents that they have that oversight over these things and some degree of voice in this process. So thank you. That would just be my input at this stage, and I look forward to the process going forward next year. And also, sorry, Chair, just what will be important is how we talk about what we suggested in terms of the hearing, because I would see us, whilst it's important for the department to go around the country, and I think we should be involved in that to some degree, but not as being our hearing. I think we should still have our own separate hearing from national. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you so much, Honourable Dudley. Honourable Kosso.
Thank you, Chairperson, and I just want to thank the briefing on the bill and to further agree with the recommendation. But Chair, you know, when you are doing consultations, I just believe that there are challenges and even fears that you're going to get from the public. As the Honourable Member was saying, that there are about 55 million people with different minds and thinking. So I'm just appealing that such things be taken seriously and be addressed in a proper manner. The other issue I wanted to talk to Chair is to check as to how far is the department when consulting stakeholders such as GBs to ensure and assure them that the intention is not taking over powers, as some might be thinking, because there are so many. In determining the education of their children, as to how far are we doing that? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Murchison.
Thank you, Chair. I also would like to take this opportunity to thank the department for allowing us to have some kind of opinion on this. I think what actually the members have already mentioned, the fact that like there's a lot of outcry. I have to say, despite the fact that you've had outcry, I'm concerned about the people who were able to be given the opportunity to actually comment. I'm not sure if the rural people from the rural areas, if they also had an opportunity to also send in their comments. And also, this bill was sent out in both Zoom English and Afrikaans. That is another way that I feel like the rural people and the people who are mostly going to be affected by this bill haven't been included because I don't think it was given out in different languages, so that you know people can have their own input for that. But then, you know, to say that, you know, you're going to have, like, public participation, then if this could actually make sure that these people have been addressed and they also participate. With regard to, you know, the amendments themselves in the bill, when you talk about the powers that are going to be taken from the SGBs, particularly when it comes to the employment of the principals and the teachers. I think the idea of taking the powers based on the fact that there were there were jobs that were sold in different provinces. We know very well that in our own government that people get jobs because they know somebody. And this is the only department that has made an investigation, a thorough investigation, to say, okay, this has happened and this is how we're going to deal with. And to go out now to say we're going to take the powers whilst the case studies that we have under our belt were able to be identified, and it's not a uniform, it hasn't been happening for that long. I mean, it's something that we found out now recently last year, that there were jobs for cash. And I don't think it warrants the kind of steps that this bill wants to take. Because you, DG, you know very well that you've taken the steps. There was an investigation, so you are dealing with it. You have you've taken the steps to make sure that this doesn't happen in the future. And now you want to take it to the department itself to be the one that employs, whereas we know very well that this country struggles from, we have challenges of corruption, we have challenges of people who get jobs not because they have qualifications, but based on the fact of who they know, and you know, like how long they've been with the government. So I think if we have to maybe reconsider that, I think for me that's the biggest concern regarding this bill.
Thank you very much, Honourable Machesi. Honourable Ngodo, before you come in, Honourable Ngodo, let me welcome Deputy Minister. You are welcome, Deputy Minister. Yeah, we are in the discussions where we're discussing this very important draft bill that is in front of you, that is still going to come to us, but we are just enjoying the chance of understanding and knowing what is it that is coming to us, why we are preparing ourselves for this. So you'll just catch up when, as the honourable members are making their comments and even asking questions from the presentation that we have just received.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and colleagues.
I've just come from a Cabinet Committee meeting where I had to respond to a report that deals with matters of education. And you might notice that all the officials of the Department of Basic Education are here rather than there. So I'd single-handedly deal with all the issues without the support of the staff, given the importance of this portfolio committee. So I just want to assure you that we hold the committee in high esteem, and the reason why I'm here is because immediately after I finished my task there, I apologized to indicate to the Deputy President that I had to be at this meeting here. So I'm glad to be part of this meeting here. Thank you. Also of the Minister. Thank you.
Thank you very much, DM. Honourable Olive.
Chairperson, is the Honourable Suti telling us that the Minister is not there either?
He's there. No.
The Minister is not in the executive meeting. She has another compelling matter to deal with, and hence my presence there and my presence here as such. But the Ministry is indeed present. And also in the context of the discussion that we have here. Okay, I think let's leave it at that. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, DM. Let me hand over to you now, Honourable Ngodo. Mr. Chen.
Thank you very much. Good morning, colleagues. Chairperson, I also want to thank the department for taking the effort to come and brief us on this, because I think it's very important not to hear things through the grapevine, especially during the era of the fake news. So a lot of issues have been eliminated to us, DM and DG. I think that I must even commend the department for the proposals that they are putting before us, because some of them might be questionable proposals, but you know, I believe that it captures most of the things that we always raise in the portfolio committees, and is very responsive to the current situation that the sector finds itself in currently. So I would like to agree with a lot of the proposals that they are putting forward. And just to allay the fears, Chairperson, I believe that a lot of the loopholes, like when you go through the proposals that the department has put before us, they are going to be closed, a lot of them. It might not be all of them all at once. And we believe that they will assist us to improve the current legislation. Particularly those that I liked most is the issue of the penalties, the increasing of the penalty from 3 months to 6 years, to the issue of language, the issue of the SGBs. It might not be an issue for all the SGBs. We know that there are SGBs that are performing very well, and those that are not performing. And it's these members that always raise issues that some SGBs are not doing the work, and the department has to take the tap for it. And I think that we would like to appreciate that you have really listened to us as a portfolio committee to take the tap for what is your core mandate, to respond to the issues at the core. And then the question that I want to raise is the issue of funding, whether the department will be able to afford some of the changes that I see that are going to be effected through the amendment of the bill. Chairperson, maybe the last point, just to highlight what I have said, is that I appreciate the fact that the following report has been taken into consideration, the constitutional issues that are there, because it's very clear to all of us that if the bill goes against the constitution, it cannot be law. It cannot, like these amendments, they want to be agreed to. And then we appreciate that even the NDP recommendations that were done long after the bill has been put in force, there are highlights that talk to it. Chairperson, let me stop there. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Mkoto. Honourable,
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Morning, ladies and gentlemen, and colleagues from PG in your intervention. I'm happy that, you know, from what we have been saying, there are things that you have touched in this amendment bill that, yes, they need urgent scrutiny. But my comment on those issues is that, you know, when you have what is some amendments, because most of them are incremental, we take from this, then we change them from that. It must not be the one that fits us, because they want to fit the bureaucracy than fitting the majority of the people down there. Those people are going to be affected. The challenge of that is that of this top-down approach of saying, no, we have this problem, yeah. The way of dealing with this problem is to amend. You will end up creating a lot of problems than solving the same problems. You know, in this democratic South Africa, a good strategy is a bottom-up approach. Bottom-up approach. Because a selected few that you touch when you're dealing with the amendments, you think they are cleverer than the masses, only to find that it's vice versa. When the SASA was established, or was proclaimed, was enacted, it wanted to address the issue of parents having a say in education through the SGB. Is it right to take their right? That's what we should ask ourselves. Is it right to take out their rights? Some of the amendments are good, but some they need further deliberations. I noticed, Chairperson, that there was this post that were sold. Where did we get the information, Chairperson? From the parents, remember? We got it from the parents that this one was put there, you understand? Now we say the HOD must come in and take the senior post. I don't think he will be in a panel. He will delegate those duties. Are we sure those people who are delegated with the duties are not going to be making the issues worse than they are today? That's number one. Two, on the Asha in clause 23, when I was looking at clause 23, you spoke about the issue of fees. Hey, DJ, I have noted with concern. I raised the thing, I think, on our 2-3 months back as meeting. Some of the schools have made the schools a quick buck making scheme. I don't see it in the that you can talk without talking about it. Some have even increased for next year, 2018, they've increased their fees by more than 8%. I can make example. I have a list of examples. If you can also go and look at Sunday Times, Sunday Times, 26, you will see they've done so. 8%. And if you check what are those things that they have made increases upon, are these things we have been telling about, Chairperson, the donations. More special private schools and public schools are now coming in there. They've made issues of donations. They've made issues of credit checks. I don't know, 600 rand for a credit check, 200 rand for a credit check. Go to Bishop Levis here. You will find that this is happening. And this exclusion, even the same SGPs, you know, there's a problem. When a person is an SGP member, we expect him to serve as those who are elected by the parent. But if he gets 50% discount, what are we saying to other parents, the majority of the parents? If we can also look at those things, and even the membership for association, it's not right. If you can also look at those things, so that we can check how we can control the fees at school. I don't expect a school, ordinary school, to be more than a university. No, it's a problem. It's a problem. The tuition is more than a university. Then it's a problem. Lastly, Chairperson. I have got on page 22, clause 23, on the provision of, you say, it's good that schools must be audited. Schools must be audited. That's what is happening even today. But my challenge is the capacity that the department is giving to the schools in terms of human capacity. You know, a principal ends up in a small school being everything, administrator, whatever the case, a groundsman, a teacher himself, a person must make sure the policies are driven in the school, and he ends up being so frustrated at that teacher. Are you prepared that you give even human resource? Because when you are dealing with finances, you need a person who is dedicated to finances. So when the time for audit, there are no irregular expenditure and the like. You indicated that every time there should be a shift of funds, experimentation, there should be a 50 plus one quorum, two-thirds majority, that must come in and make sure that they shift those funds. But are you making sure that there's capacity that is there? But my problem, the last point, the problem that we have with the department is implementation. You can have good policies. I'm telling you, Chairperson, very, very powerful policies. Remember the one that you have alluded to, Honorable Mkoto, that there was this penalty of 3 months. Now it's extended to 6 months.
Yes.
6 years. By writing down that now from 3 months to 6 years, it cannot scare people off because we have written down. It cannot scare people off. What can scare people of doing the wrong things is implemented. Even the three months, if that 3 months was implemented, the thing would have stopped. There would have been a reduction, not a total stop. There would have been a reduction. But you don't even implement the 3 months. Now you extend to 6 months. They will even laugh at us. But you know what? Let them even increase to 12. Let them increase to 24. We will see what they are going to do. If we have the capacity, you know, capacity, we mean people who can translate rhetoric into action. We speak, they act. We speak, they act. Then we say, no, that person has got capacity. I rest my case.
I was just about to arrest you. Thank you very much, Honorable Pastor.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mostly I'm covered with the former speaker. When you introduced this to us, you said this is a briefing session, of which I thought that it's for us just to listen and wait for the final presentation. When you said the final presentation is still coming, the question was, how does it come that this problem is so provoking the community, or the community is already commenting on the appeal, on the media, and every day in the morning when you open your radio, you will hear that there are some discussions on this thing. But you say it's not yet for
public. Can you allow me to rest you also, Honorable Person, on this?
Please. Thank you, Chaplain. Yeah. So what I wanted also to have a comment. I'm concerned about this clause 6 that is giving them the right for cultural, religious, what. At the end, to what extent is each and every child who is applying for exemption for his cultural or for his religious belief going to which extent are the children going to be allowed to practice their beliefs? Because I'm thinking of the communities with diverse cultures of its community members and so on. Chairperson, allow me to ask this question on proceeding. Appointment of family members. Where does the concept of declaration come in? That you, if you, your family is involved in business making, you must declare. And who is your family? Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you very much, Honorable Person. Maybe DG, DM, but for this one, I think we must all understand, as to say, the process with the department is already on.
Okay.
The public is already commenting, you know, it has been open. It's us as parliament that is still going to come. So we are going to still start that process as parliament when the whole process has been brought to us. But DM, it was a good exercise that we did today. As Honorable Basson is saying, you listen to the radios, media, people are talking, the interest that has been drawn by these amendments is just alarming. And for us, we needed to be on board and to know exactly what is it that is being spoken about, why we are going to be getting into the process. But what we strongly believe is that this SASSA initially was promulgated so that it addresses the injustices of the past, make sure that the quality education, issues of access to our land, to education and so forth. And from the amendments that we have had, DM, I know we have been championing these a lot. We definitely agree that there are clauses that are quite controversial, more than others, more especially the one on SGBs. The removal of, I don't want to use the removal word of it, but yeah, the so-called the removal of the powers of the SGBs and so forth. I know SGM, I know for today, as we have said, we are not yet at the final stages of this, but you can give us even your understanding as to say, in the input that you are giving, we are getting, what is it really, which side is it drawn towards, fully understanding that we are still dealing with it. There's so much that you are going to be studying even in the inputs that we have got from the public, but it's quite interesting just for us to hear what is it that you are getting. Because I know even what the DG has said, most of the inputs are on that clause most of the time. With the rest of the amendments, yes, it can be controversial. There are issues that we can raise, but at the end of the day, we want to see our learners throughout the country having access to education wherever they are. We know there are clauses like the issue of school admission, school languages. It's one of the things that will draw a lot of attention to the public as to say what is it that they say when it comes to the amendments that you are coming up with. But yeah, basically that is what we wanted you to give us, just an idea, not the final thing. We're not yet there, you are not yet there, but thank you very much for the briefing that you have got. It has opened up a lot to us, even to the public. There's so much now as we move forward with this that will be more understanding as we engage on the draft that is before you, that is soon to be before us as Parliament. Then can I give to you then, DM, to just to talk on the comments and some of the questions that the honourable members have raised today, then we can end up this briefing.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and esteemed colleagues. It's unfortunate that I wasn't able to listen to all the comments and questions, and really thank the members for raising concerns, because that's precisely what this process is all about. I thought perhaps it probably has been conveyed to you that the process where it is right now is Cabinet had approved that the draft bill be advertised in the Government Gazette to invite public comment. The period for doing so has expired, and we've also been generous that even beyond the expiry date we've received and accepted presentations. I just want to assure the committee that what is going to happen now is that we're going to be in the business of processing the various comments. Nothing is absolute, and certainly you might find very, very useful comments that might guide the department in a different way. Once we've reflected on that and we've assured some important stakeholders like the Principals Association, the Governing Bodies Association, and other stakeholders, so that we would meet with them to raise the issues that might be contentious and where we have strong views about it, so that we have an opportunity to engage before we put forward to Cabinet the proposed bill that would then be either accepted or rejected, and if accepted, then be referred to Parliament. Once the bill comes back to Parliament, the entire process of consultation starts anew. Parliament then has the ability to receive, to invite public comments, have oral hearings, and then put forward those particular proposals, any amendments that may arise as a result of those that consultative process, to the minister, who then takes it to Cabinet for the approval. So where there is marked deviation from it, then Cabinet would have to say, well, okay, look, we've listened to this, this is it. So by and large, the process is in its very early stages. It has not even touch the doors of Parliament. But I think this is a useful exercise because it is in the public domain. Public representatives would want to know what is the thinking around various matters, and without having to go into the detail of the debate, but just to get an idea of the rationale. I thought it's important for us to start there, because the impression is created sometimes that the bill is going to be a reality in a month's time. It cannot be. It's certainly not going to happen in the next 6 months. Probably if it does become law, for those of us who have been serving long enough in Parliament, we know it's going to take at least a year before it becomes law, before it's even gazetted. So there is sufficient time for further consultation, deliberation, engagement, persuasion, or whatever else. The second point is to recognize that change is always difficult. You know, some of us have had the benefit of being here for longer than others. In 1994, when the president of this country, the first democratic South Africa, Nelson Mandela, proposed the appointment of Chief Justice Ismail Mohammed as a judge of the highest court, as Chief Justice, there were more than 50 judges, white judges, who protested against that appointment. And the reality is that Ismail Mohammed is known to have been the best academic, qualified judge, chief justice. So that kind of resistance occurred at the highest level from members of the judiciary at that time, 1994, not too long ago. But that was the outcome of a suggestion which would transform the judicial landscape in the country. Change was difficult, it was painful. And yet when it did occur, Chief Justice Ismail Mohammed was not allowed to even live in the Free State because he was Indian, or even spend a night there. Now becomes the Chief Justice of the highest court. And yet, those were high echelon justices that have been serving for such a long time, who ought to have been committed to social justice, who basically petitioned against the appointment of Chief Justice Ismail Mohammed. Now if you look at it now, currently, you say, that's absurd. How could judges have done that? Now, it's because they had a particular vested interest. You might have the same reality that occurs here. Now, let me give you two examples before we even look at the detail of what has been raised. There was the issue of a nose stud in KwaZulu-Natal. A young girl wore a nose stud. It's a cultural device. The school said, no, you're not allowed to wear this because it does not comport with the rules of the governing of the school. The matter was raised. We said categorically, look, this is a constitutionally guaranteed right. There's nothing wrong with the performance of the learner. She excelled in terms of performance. There's nothing wrong with the discipline. She excelled in terms of basically following the general rules of the school. But it's merely a nose stud that created a problem. They took the matter to the highest court to prevent this child from wearing a nose stud. What did the Constitutional Court say? That one has to basically create space and opportunity for cultural and religious expression. That doesn't come from the lowest court, it comes from the highest court. But look at the level of resistance that the governing body went right up to the Constitutional Court to challenge the wearing of a nose stud. Change is difficult. But now those who wish to wear nose stud, not for ostentation, but as part of their cultural identity, have an opportunity to do so. Similarly, when it comes to rights, religious rights, we are in a diverse society. Society in the past has been accustomed to living in a very homogeneous environment. Same religion, same language, same color. There was hardly any difference in terms of cultural identity, hardly any difference in terms of religious identity, and people, the classroom was generally either white male or white female, white children. Either an Indian male or an Indian female, Indian children. Or an African male and female, African children. And generally it would be the same language that is spoken, very, very homogeneous. Now suddenly, as a result of an open and democratic society, which is entrenched and embedded in our constitution, our environment becomes heterogeneous. More languages, more cultures, more religions. Surely we have to be tolerant of that particular reality. And when the Honorable Basson raises this issue, she has to understand the context of the fact that we're not talking about a homogeneous society or prohibiting any form of religious or religious instruction. But to say that religion studies is fine, but you cannot now prefer in the context of our democracy one religion above the other, whether it's Islam, whether it's Christianity, whether it's Hinduism, whether it's Judaism. In other words, we have to respect the rights of all citizens to subscribe to any religious or cultural belief as long as it does not encroach on the rights of other individuals. So if I am Muslim and I'm in a school that is predominantly Jewish or Christian, can they impose a particular religious belief on me? No. Similarly, if you are Christian and you're in a Muslim school, can you impose a Muslim belief? No. So that diversity, which we celebrate in our country, must become a reality also in the classroom environment. So these interventions are as a result of the fact that there have been many, many instances, and I know about it personally, Chris would tell you about it, where we've had to intervene. I mean, here's a youngster who basically has committed the Quran to memory. He's called a Hafiz, in other words, he knows by heart the entire Quran, the script in Arabic. He wears a beard because it's a closely held religious belief for that individual. He wants to wear it for that particular reason, not for ostentation, not for fashion. Seek permission, they refuse. They refuse it. Why? Because you're not allowed to wear a beard. Explain to them that this child now has 6 A's in grade 10, 6 A's in grade 11, 6 A's in grade 12. But still, notwithstanding his academic performance, he is not allowed to wear a beard. Now that is being intolerant of religious expression, because it's not infringing on anybody else's right. It's merely exercising a closely held belief by the individual. So I say when we look at this proposed amendment, we must look at it in the context of social justice, in the context of our diversity, in the context of the ethos that we had all agreed to in our constitution. Let me give you another example. And I think this is important that we raise this, because it is, I know it's kind of emotionally charged, but the context must be understood. In Ermelo, there was a school that was half full or half empty. And learners were prohibited from entering the school because it was an Afrikaans-speaking school, notwithstanding the fact that they could introduce parallel medium, notwithstanding the fact that the department had indeed offered to pay for those educators who teach in an English medium. They said the governing body has the right to determine policy and language. That was a decision. It went to the Supreme Court of Appeal. The Supreme Court of Appeal, by the way, upheld the view of the governing body. We said no. It cannot be so where there is space, where there is opportunity, where the funding is going to take place by the department, and the locus of authority does not lie with the governing body under those instances, lies with the head of the department. What did the Constitutional Court say? It said that the school is obliged, firstly, to look at the broad interests of the community, not the narrow interests of the immediate community, but the broad interests, which means that it's inclusive. Secondly, it said that the locus of authority is not the governing body, but the head of the department. I didn't say it, the Constitutional Court. Now what you're seeing in this amendment is an affirmation, a confirmation of the locus of authority. So that there is no contestation between who has the authority. Is it the governing body? I can do as I want to. I can charge fees, say I can give discounts to members of the governing body. I can charge fees for magazines that we're going to print or for extra transport and impose unreasonable, unfair and inequitable duties or responsibilities and obligations on parents who want to have the child in a school that is performing extremely well. We would want social justice to prevail wherever it occurs. Now the point here is this. Is it the intention, and that's a question that is to be asked, of the department to exclude participation of governing bodies? I want to give you this assurance. No. They will be part of that particular process. They have to be part of the process. And so too are the unions, by the way. We want to exclude neither of them. But there are three elements, and the DA has emphasized this not once, not twice, not thrice, but over and over again. It's not about qualifications, it's not only about experience, it is also about competency. And we're saying that in the appointment of instructional leaders who are responsible for the professional management and leadership of a school, it's critical that those leaders have the appropriate skills in terms of experience, qualifications, and competency. But it's going to be contentious. You would even find the unions are going to resist to say, why should we basically have those competencies? And we're saying, if indeed those professional leaders, the managers of the institution, determined by and large the quality of those schools over there, it's critical that we make sure that they are appropriately appointed. And then, the question then is, who is the authority? We certainly say that we should not ignore the views of the governing body, because they play a particular role. We should not exclude the views of even the unions, whoever they might be, whether it's NEPTOSA, whether it's SATU, or any other union. But the decision ultimately, in terms of that leadership, should be with the head of department. So that is the view that we've got to take. Our country is the only country in the world where governing bodies appoint educators. Only country in the world. Quite unique. And we think it's a good exercise for governing bodies to own that particular process, to be part of it. But we certainly don't believe that they are the final authority, that they could determine who enters, who comes in, who goes out. Do we have to go to court every time with an application to allow people who have been excluded on the basis of either religion or culture or race? And that's a critical element that one has to take into account. So I'm giving you the kind of broad rationale to say that there is a legal, a moral, and a historical basis for this amendment. But more interestingly, this year is the culmination of a long process that involves all heads of departments. In fact, the Western Cape, for example, was part of the team, the legal team, that is responsible for this particular vote that is being put forward here. So it wasn't, I'm saying that they were part of the legal team. Please, I have not interrupted you when you were speaking, and I do not intend to do so, Mr. Ollis.
Okay, can I get in? Honorable DM and Honorable Ollis. Can you stop that, please?
Because you know,
please.
To say, here is the person speaking, raise your hand, say, I wish to respond to the matter. But to simply blurt out, I do not agree with you, without any opportunity of giving the person who makes the presentation being heard, basically means that you are intolerant of the views of even a minister. How do you then expect people at schools to behave themselves when you cannot instill that kind of discipline that one would expect from an esteemed member of parliament? I've come here, I've left a meeting where I had to respond to an important issue of education, and interestingly enough, and maybe Mr. Honourable Honours should hear that, there are six recommendations that were made. One of the recommendations that comes not from the department, not from government, from an independent source, is that the appointment of instructional leaders should not be in the hands of government. Doesn't come from me. It comes from a monitoring from a consultant by Nick Taylor, Professor Nick Taylor, independently, a renowned academic, saying that one of the problems with regard to schools is the kind of instructional leadership it has. Now, I'm not saying he's right, I'm not saying he's wrong. I'm not saying that this is the final word. I'm simply saying this is the rationale and the thinking that has led us in a particular way. And I can give you the assurance that the intention is not to close out the governing body, but to ensure that we have a system where there is no confusion about where the locus of authority is. It took us more than 6 years to satisfy everybody else, including the governing body association, that the locus of authority is the health department. Now, if they want to, and I don't know how they're going to do that, change the decision of the Constitutional Court, please go and do that and tell them, take their decision on review. Tell them you've been wrong, Constitutional Court, in terms of locating the locus of authority where it is. The other point, the last point that I would like to make, is that the legislation allows for prescribing. What we are saying is let us hear all the views, and then let the minister prescribe a process which is inclusive, which basically does not exclude anybody else, but we certainly comport with the principles laid out by the court. So if at all there's going to be an argument about the fact that we cannot basically make any determination about policy in terms of language, in terms of religion, in terms of race, I'm going to say no, 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 we are going to make that determination as a department. Because if we don't do so, we are not committed to the ethos of this society that is based on non-racialism and non-sexism. Inasmuch as we insisted that in the high courts, any judge's president should not only be pale and male, but they should also be non-racial, and that they should also be women. And slowly but surely, we are seeing a presence of women. It's been a huge struggle. But we've got to be hard-nosed about those realities, because that represents our constitution. So we are not going to be apologists for the views and the values that are embedded in our constitution. But at the same time, we are not going to be deaf to to concerns that are legitimate, to say, listen, Annie, you can't now basically put us on the side as if we have no interest. I think governing bodies play an extremely important role, and we've elevated them to that, we recognize that, we affirm that, and we would want to continue doing so, because, I mean, how else are you going to begin to own the institution? Lastly, to say, this is not an attack on Model C schools. It's not an attack on former Model C schools. There are no Model C schools now. It's just a process of evolution that responds to the challenges that we face. And in fact, you know, perhaps the furthest thing away from these amendments is your Model C schools. It might be more about your rural schools and your township schools. But the way it gets twisted as if to say that there is now full frontal assault on former Model C schools, which is not the reality. It's a principle that must be understood and the context that must be understood. You cannot, on the one hand, harp about the fact that there is manipulation and there's buying of jobs and that basically, you know, SGBs are being controlled, jobs are being sold, they're being pushed in a particular way, and you make a huge noise about it. The moment you talk about policy now, change, which affects both those schools and the former Model C schools, which, interestingly enough, forms a very small minority, then there's a huge noise. But listen to the quarters where the noise comes from. Look at the number of faces that you see out there and see who do they represent. And you understand that there is self-interest involved here. We have a particular responsibility to ensure that we represent the broad interests of society, not the narrow interests of any particular view. We too hold the view that you cannot have exorbitant fees that deny access. If you ask the DA, if you ask the Freedom Front, you ask any of our organizations, they will say yes. You have to be reasonable in terms of your fees so that you don't deny access, especially to the poorest of the poor. So what are the creative ways in which we deal with it? And let us look at the reality of our evolution. There was a timeshare person where less than 25% of our people were exempted from paying fees. Today, we can celebrate the fact that 9 million children go to no fee schools. That's huge. There was a time where only 250,000 people were fed in schools. Today, we have more than 9 million children that are fed a meal a day. But it didn't happen overnight. It was a long process. But there had to be an ideological, political commitment to that particular reality, that we have to ensure that we do not deny access of opportunity to the poorest of the poor. These are my comments, and I would like to say that rather than basically engaging with the detail of the bill, let us understand the spirit of the bill and say we are open to persuasion. And I don't think it would be correct for us to say this is the final word. That we still have to deliberate and reflect on it. You would see the bill, you've got this draft bill. It will be interesting to see what is the bill that Cabinet approves. What are the changes that have been brought about as a result of the various submissions that have been made by the public? And I tell you, there have been long and wide submissions. But there are some submissions that are concrete. There are some submissions that are mechanical. So, for example, you have a situation where a principal of the school basically gets parents to just sign to say they support, they oppose the bill. The parent has no idea what the bill is, doesn't understand what the content is. Now you have a submission of 2,000 parents from a particular school opposing the bill. And if you ask any one of those parents who have signed, do you know, have you read the draft bill? They say no, but the principal said we should do so. Now that day is a manipulation of a consultative process. We're not going to allow that. It's not the number, it's not the quantity of the submissions that we receive, it's the quality of the submission. And if indeed we have erred, or if indeed we can do things in a better way, I simply believe that we should look at it. We can't possibly, because our whole democracy has been built on rational persuasion. We didn't come with ready-made solutions to say either this way or that way. We spoke to each other, we persuaded each other, and we came to a conclusion. And that should be the final word, to say this is part of a consultative process which should and must end in the best interest of the poorest of the poor, particularly the African child who has been denied for so long. Let's not forget our past. Thank you very much, Chief.
Thank you so much, DM. And I think, DM, from what you have said, you have responded to almost the basic and the fundamental question that was there, as to say, you have started the process, people are still commenting. Just to paint that picture is to say you are not imposing whatever proposed amendments are not as if it's something that is being imposed to the public, but you are prepared to take whatever comments that the public is coming up with. So let us await that process then for Cabinet to finish so that we also open up that space for public to comment. Then at the end, we make sure that we have persuaded each other wherever we can persuade each other. But at the center of everything is the benefit of that African child to get the quality education in our schools and be protected by the Act as is a Schools Act, that is what is it for, and does not deviate from the constitution of our country. So I think basically, because from what the honourable members most of the time are saying, we're just throwing in so that consider these facts as we move on, consider these facts, but we are still going to be engaging more deliberately on the whole issue. yeah. That is why I say thank you very much. I think, DM, on that one, on what has been said, you have really covered that. Let me hear what Honourable Alice and Honourable Machesi are saying.
Chairperson, thank you. I won't comment on the any further on the questions or the merits, but just a comment on Mr. Suti's personal attack. I am just want to put on the record that Mr. Suti has been here many years. I've been here quite a few years. He knows that I respect him. He also knows that when people speak in Parliament, whether it's in the House or here in the committee, there's not this absolute silence. There's a history of a little bit of bromming.
Honourable Olive.
He knows that I like him very much.
You know what? Honourable Olive and Honourable Suti, today I think you are the two men that I like most. You have shown that men can be so much emotional, and so you know, let us just leave what you is there. So surely it wasn't personal, it was just an environment of Parliament. Yeah, definitely. Honourable Machesi.
Thank you, Chair. I also just would like to comment on what the Honourable Deputy Minister has just said with regard to the fact that the faces that you see here, they have their own interests. And the reason why that we have these faces is because that's what the first question that I asked was, that was this translated into various languages? Are the people in the rural area aware of this amendment? That could actually be the reason. As much as you say you want to include everyone, but in the first place we have excluded the majority of the people who are actually going to be affected by this amendment, by not allowing them to also have an input. As much as you say that there was a public participation, they were given less than a month to have a participation on this bill. So I just want to say, you know, we cannot say one thing and then, you know, then our actions mean something else. Because if we did include the people in the rural areas, the people in the township, I called a couple of principals myself who said they've heard about the bill, but they didn't know that they have to submit their views and make an input on this. So we cannot say that the people in the room, they actually have an interest. I think all South Africans have an interest in this bill. Even the learners themselves. I just want to find out as well, because the learners are also part of the SGB. Were they given an opportunity to actually comment? Those who sit in the SGB, were they given that opportunity?
Thank you. Maybe before you even come in, DG, I know when it was said, when we started the meeting, as to say, and it's not for the first time we even say this as a committee, as to say, DM, when it comes to the open communication, the public, how do we educate our public out there to know their rights? What is it to be done? I think the point that Honourable Machesi is raising, it's drilling to that, as to say, sometimes there are things that you take for granted. I'm happy by what she's saying. Not that some of them are not aware, but they don't know the processes, when to comment and all that. It goes back to the issue of our role as public representatives. When do we get out to make sure that we educate our communities on these things? It cannot be the issue of a department as such, what she's raising. But I think she's raising a very important point as to say, what is our role, all of us here? What is it that we do in our constituencies? Do we expose our public to make sure that when such things come, they get a chance to do that. I'm not saying you, department, you don't have that role to play, but I think what she has raised, really, it comes back to all of us here to say, have we played our part well? What is it that you are going to do as from today, moving forward, up until the process comes to Parliament? Because that is exactly what we need to do, what Honourable Matches is coming up with. The issue of language, what are we doing as we engage with them? I think she has raised a very important point. You can just comment DM so that we close on the issue.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and firstly to Mr. Hollis, I do like him very much. It's just part of the kind of retort that basically knows, he's not going to keep on interjecting, so he gave me a free rein after that. It's part of tactics and strategy. But be that as it may, we do like each other.
Yeah.
But I think I'd like to respond to what Honourable Machete said. Look, this is what I'm talking about. Now, here this sound suggestion coming to say, look, if you want it to be more accessible, make sure that it's in more than one language. It's not only in English, it's in all the other languages, or as many of the languages as possible. So it's something that we could look at. Certainly, I think at least, because of the prohibitive cost, you know, just to advertise a bill in the government gazette is huge. But I think when it comes to Parliament, the executive could then take the responsibility, because now that is the last link, that it should basically look at publishing. Well, certainly the Constitution provides it's got to be in at least two languages. In at least two languages, one of which should be an indigenous African language. So that should happen, but I think it should go beyond that. The second is really to recognize the value, and I think, Chair, you're perfectly right. How do we as public representatives engage with our communities? It's not on a party political basis, but as public representatives. We've got constituency offices throughout the country. And to what extent? So what the department should really do is to say, to make available to all constituency offices the content of the bill in as many languages as possible, so that enables the public representatives to be able to engage with their constituency. And I'm grateful for her to her suggestions. The third and perhaps the more important one is really the role of the National Council of Provinces. I've had the benefit of serving there as well as the chief whip. And I do remember at the time that when we dealt with important legislation, as members of the National Council of Provinces, we engaged both nationally and at the provincial legislatures with a wide array of stakeholders across the country. And I think this is a huge opportunity for both the National Assembly and the National Council of Provinces that represent provincial interests in particular to be able to do that. Let's perhaps conclude by saying that we can give you the assurance that we're not going to curtail the consultative process. We would rather encourage it so that we have better views and we have better access to it. So I'm not disagreeing at all with the Honourable Macheka. I'm saying the issue of language is indeed an important one and certainly one that the department should look at. I can't assure you that it's going to be in all the 11 official languages, but certainly at the very least in our dominant languages, so that we make it more accessible and try to make it as available as possible to our constituency offices. So even if we provide it to our members, and they could basically copy them, and because they do get resources, by the way, to do that for the constituency offices, and then basically make it much more public and accessible. So thank you very much for that. It just shows that we do listen. You see, yeah, already she's guided us in a particular way, and we say, yes, it makes good sense.
Okay, thank you very much, DM. But before we close this session, We got an indication that yes, the 10th of November has come and passed, but the department, we are still taking in the comments. Are we correct to say that? Because we need even to guide as we go out there. Up until when are we saying the minister has extended that so that we can be clear and show what it is that we are talking about when it comes to that?
Just in order to basically show our commitment to the spirit, can we say the 10th of January would be a fair time for us? So you've got the whole of December until the 10th of January. And the reason why I say 10th of January is really we've got to seriously start looking at all the submissions, to consolidate them and do that. So if at all, that is it. Because you must remember, after that, you're still going to have an opportunity when the bill comes to Parliament. Submissions will be made, proposals will be made. So this is the first of the first leg, as it were. So really, I don't want to stretch it unduly, because the department also has work to do. It has to bring it to its conclusion. But I thought the 10th of January would be a fair time. It gives people an opportunity. They have almost 6 weeks within which to make the final submission.
Honourable Olive?
Sorry, Chair, just a point of clarity. The Western Cape wrote to the Minister to ask for an extension from that official date that you published in the Government Gazette, and the Minister said no. And now Mr. Suti is saying we can extend it till the 10th of January. Does the public know this? Because this is the first we hear of it, that there's possibility to receive comments until the 10th of January. I don't think the public knows that.
Okay. I think, DG, you need to come in, because I'm asking that exactly because when you opened, you said the minister said can be extended. You still, how are we communicating the extension date and so forth? Because that is what we need to communicate further as we finalize this. Did you?
No, Chair, I think it's only on the extension date, so I leave all of these things that have been raised, responded to by the Deputy Minister.
Mm-hmm.
And I must add that I'm quite impressed with the interaction between the Deputy Minister and Honourable Police.
Just leave that to DG. Just leave that to DG.
Okay. Chair, on the 10th of October, the Minister issued a statement. And in that statement, the Minister indicated that although the deadline has come, it was the 10th, we are going to continue to receive comments even beyond the 10th.
Mm-hmm.
The Minister didn't give a specific date.
Yeah.
So what the Deputy Minister is saying wouldn't be in contradiction in any way. That statement is out, and I'm just sitting with Eliza. It was issued on the 10th, and the Minister further made a commitment that we'll even consider going on a public hearing. But I must also add, I thought that public hearings have their genesis in institutions such as Parliament, and they are not intended to educate people and get them to believe what we think is our position. It's about sharing more information and giving a more listening ear to the public. I've indicated that I was part of the public hearings that preceded the promulgation of the South African Schools Act. That's how they were conducted. Some of the provisions in the South African Schools Act are a verbatim contribution of the public. Some of the members of the public, if they look at that piece of legislation, they would identify with it. And therefore, public hearings are creating an opportunity for both the department and the public to contribute towards finalizing the process of a legislation or a bill. Thank you.
Thank you. So, Honourable Ollis, can I advise really, if ever there was that response to the Western Cape, the department is going to issue another communication. I don't want to get into that because I don't know really where did it come from, but we all agree that today it has been extended, but with an open end. But now we're looking at the 10th of January, where we're saying that will be the last day of our of the comments to the department. Thank you very much, Honourable Members, for this session. Thank you very much, DM. Thank you very much to our public. I know sometimes when you come to these meetings, you get very frustrated because you wish to say something, Unfortunately, we're not yet on the public hearings. We cannot allow that for today. But we know that your presence here, there is so much that you have said. There is so much that have gone in through your mind and you wish to say, but surely you'll be starting to add on the comments towards the department, also preparing your comments towards our process when you open it as Parliament. Thank you ever so much. I know if ever you wish to go out, because we'll be starting. What, Honourable Hollis, what is happening? Okay. Yeah, you can be excused, good people, if ever you want to leave, so that now as members and the departmental officers, we still stretch ourselves you don't disturb as we proceed with the second item on the agenda. Thank you ever so much. Can we stretch honourable members just for 3 minutes, then we'll begin with another session.
All around the house.
Lamp.
Gimele when I you should do the Mobang was the Let's settle down, please.
It is only more than a little bit of testing. I might be against it. This is not something.
What the insect I hate. In the end, the love of the immobilization and the
inactivity of my family here. My engineer, I can't get any kind of medical.
Let us start the second session. We are to tackle the second quarter report. As per our agenda for today. Honorable members, what I'm going to raise, I'm not suggesting, but I'm throwing it on the table so that we talk about it. It's the second quarter report. It's one of the reports, again, that is very important. We only have an hour to tackle it as of now. I know, honorable members, the reason why I raise this, whenever we are short of time, I know the complaints that I always get from you, honorable members, is to say we did not get sufficient time to engage. There are so many things that are there in the report and so forth. I'm throwing it to you now as to say we have got an hour to take this report. It's the last day of this term. This year, whatever we're going to be having now is in January when we come back. My question and proposal that I'm putting to you now is, are we saying we are going, can manage to tackle the quarterly report in an hour's time? Is it possible? The proposal that I'll be coming up with, but of which I'm saying, if you don't agree with it, I won't be disappointed or embarrassed at all. It was a proposal as to say, I don't see ourselves doing justice to the report that is going to come to us with all the preparedness that we have on the report. We have read it and there's so much that we need to discuss with our department. As I'm saying, it's just a proposal as to say, why don't you pack this report? Because basically it was as if the briefing won't be this long to take so much time. But if you feel, honorable members, that we can continue, really, I'm not against that, but I was just saying, looking at the time that we have, are we really sure that we are going to do justice on the report, on the second quarterly report that you are just about to receive? I'm just opening up that to you, honorable members, and throwing that. Honorable Mathezi, I can see you are ready to come in.
Thank
honorable
you, Chair.
Honorable Mugoto, your hand over.
Yes, I really agree with you because I don't think in an hour's time we'll do justice to the report. So if it's possible, maybe we can have it first thing when we come back from our report.
Okay. Thank you, honorable Mathezi. Honorable Mugoto, what were you saying?
No. I want to... So I agree with my colleague, Honorable Mathezi, on the proposal that she's making. Because, it's not the first time that we are
having two reports being bundled together.
Mm.
So we
and
can
take the second at the same time. Okay, thank you very much. That has been moved and seconded to the honourable members. Is there anyone who is supported? So let us apologize to the department really, but for you to do your job well, we need time, we need to engage with you. We know that you have spent a lot of time on the reports that we had, the draft Bella bill. So our sincere apologies for that. We can see how prepared were you for us to engage on this second Godali report. We are agreeing that you are postponing it to the first meeting, of which it will be communicated to you in 2018, where we'll be doing both the reports and, yeah. DG?
No, on that to object.
No, he can't.
I wanted to object.
But I'm humbly requesting that, at least from an accounting point of view, of all these managers that are here, only one came for the pillar. Only one. So which means, provided that you'll either help subsidize our expenses for the next meeting. Otherwise, you're going to ask me about this expense in the next quarterly report.
Budget proposal.
DJ, in as much as we wish to entertain what we are saying, but once you open up what you are saying to us, I think there is so much that you can get from us. But I don't want us to get into that argument or debate that you want to start now. Honorable Machesi.
Thank you, Chair. You know, the DJ immediately said to us he's been inundated with a lot of response regarding the Bella Bill. So today should have been really allocated to the discussion of Bella Bill because of the interest in that. So, yeah, but
No, you know, as I'm saying, DG, I just don't want, you know, what the responses I'm just getting, you know, let us not get into what you are raising now, DG, please. But honor of all this, let me take it.
Excuse me, you know, I speak my mind, but I accept to be overruled. I actually agree with him. I think that it's for us as Parliament to check our agenda going forward so that when we have something very controversial,
we don't
put another thing on the agenda.
Yeah.
And we can agree that. And so next year when we do our programme, we won't waste anybody's time. When there's a controversial thing, we'll say this is controversial, it needs a whole meeting.
Yeah.
Minutes, you can always touch them in 2 seconds. You know, it doesn't matter.
Okay, thank you for that. Yeah, let's agree that it's something that we'll guard against as we move forward. Thank you very much, honourable members, colleagues, the meeting is adjourned. Happy Christmas, enjoy your holidays.
Okay,
I'm sorry, honourable members. I'm sorry, honourable members and our colleagues. Just a minute, please. Just a minute, Honourable Machesi, Honourable Khosa.
Okay.
I'm very sorry to end the year like this. This is our last meeting of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Usually, Honourable Vasson nearly killed me now. Usually, we always have a minute just to say farewell to each other, enjoy your Christmas. Last year, I fully remember when I was saying, let's go and enjoy ourselves and have a rest and relax. Honourable David said, oh, Che, that is why you lose. You go and relax. We are not going to relax. We are going to be working. That was his last comments for the year. So even now, can I allow honourable members to do that today? And it will be short. We only have two parties that are here just to preempt the farewell speeches that will be getting into the chamber. Let us have the farewell speeches. A farewell note for the committee. Honourable Olive?
Chair, this is my first end of year in this committee, so you'll forgive me, I don't know what the tradition is of this committee, but I've just enjoyed this committee immensely. We had an unfortunate accident this year. Thankfully, most of us have been able to recover. It was a big event in our lives, and I just thank God that most of us are okay. I really appreciate this committee.
I think on behalf of Honorable Marchese and myself, I can really say that the committee functions well. It's one of the really well-functioning committees of Parliament. I've been on several other committees as my boss moves me where he thinks I should best go. So I've been on many committees, and this is truly, I think, the best functioning committee that I've been on. So I congratulate you as chair and to my colleagues from the other parties. Really, we are open, frank, diverse. We raise our issues. We don't get told to shut up, even if we say things that others don't like. But we do it in a friendly, congenial space. I appreciate the DG. Sometimes I get emotional, and sometimes he gets emotional. But I think this is a committee where really we don't hide things in dark corners. And I've been on parliamentary committees where things get hidden in dark corners and you're not allowed to ask certain questions and it becomes terrible. This committee is not like that. And I've really appreciated working with each member of the committee, from the ANC, from the IFP, the UDM, from all the opposition parties. I've enjoyed working with the members of the department. And I think that if we continue in that spirit, as I've learned to work with the rest of the folks on this committee and from the department, I think, and the minister, deputy minister as well, I think we will go places because we don't hide things away. We air them, we put them on the table, and that's what Parliament should be, a place where we can ask the awkward questions, where we can be told we have the facts wrong, where I can tell the deputy minister he's misleading the House and he doesn't get offended like he did this morning. So thank you so much. I feel very welcome in this committee, and I've really, really felt that we make progress on this committee because we speak frankly. And I think it's a very good value to have in this democratic parliament. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much, Honourable Olive.
Honourable, and a Merry Christmas to all those who celebrate Christmas those who celebrate from the other faith.
I wish you also a prosperous New Year and a good festive season with your family.
Thank you so much, Honourable Gotto. Yeah, that's very important, DM. That's very important, DM. You can't miss that one.
The ANC should brave themselves for
their conference.
Honourable Gotto.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Members, I would like to take this opportunity to thank all of you for having contributed to the success of this portfolio committee. In the many ways that we have worked together, we have grown to be a family, we have experienced everything, good, bad, you know, and, you know, I can't really express, and it has shown the strength and the bond that we have been able to build together. I think Honorable Ulis was quite correct when he said that this committee is one of the most exciting committee to belong to. It does not matter where you start from, whether you have the background of education or not, you end up, you know, merging into the system and become, you know, part of the system. Because members allow you to learn, to commit mistakes, and even to grow. So in that case, our portfolio committee chairperson is one of the committee that has never failed to meet when it has had its agenda to meet. We have always had a quorum. Even when we know that we are going to disagree in the portfolio committee, we always meet and differ and disagree, you know, and end up agreeing that, you know, we are from different, you know, families, but one big family of education whose intention is to, you know, help the African child. We have really appreciated the work that has been done by the department in trying to implement what we have agreed to as Parliament. We know that it's a very difficult task for you. Some of the tasks being beyond your control, but, you know, knowing the MPs, they will always demand a better performance. And it does not mean that if we, you know, pinch you or pin you down, it means that we hate you. there is no need to be acrimonious. It's a relationship that is determined by different roles that we are holding as members of parliament. So in that way, DM, we also want to appreciate that, you know, together with the minister, even though there are complaints that the minister is hardly there in certain instances, but we know that wherever she is, she's executing the work of the department. And we would strongly want to appreciate that it does not matter what happens, whether in parliament or in the portfolio, you are always there to respond to the opposition, to members and all that. You are one such leader that we really appreciate as a portfolio committee. The statements and all that we appreciate. Having said all of that, Chairperson, I would like to say to you, please go home and enjoy with the families, because it's very important to build families and enjoy your festive season. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Can I then hand over to UDM? DM, I know you are part of us as public representative, but also a leader of the department. If we can get a say from you. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very, very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, I agree with all the members, both from the GA and the ANC today, but this is a very, very dynamic portfolio committee. And really, when I engage with this portfolio committee, I seldom do so on the basis of party lines, but on the basis of the merit that each member of this committee brings. They really are a wonderful team to work with. And the minister is mindful of that, and she continuously tells me that we are so fortunate to have such a strong portfolio committee, as diverse as it might be. So I think we must thank you, Chairperson, for being an astute, hard-working, diligent leader. To the Whippery, from my ANC side, well-disciplined, well-organized, to all the political parties, because you are vibrant and robust in your debate, but at the same time, there's a cohesion. You know, Mr. Ollis, I just want to tell you that you grew, I didn't know you for long at the time, but when I heard you speak at a memorial service, you touched my heart.
Yeah.
Even if we had any other differences, we will always be friends, because that you showed your clear humanity, and to me that was a very touching moment. So thank you for that kind of empathy and solidarity. And I think this is what the committee needs, and this is what the country needs. It needs this vibrant, robust debate engagement. We don't have all the answers. So I thank you and each and every single member of the portfolio committee for the wonderful, wonderful work that they're doing, and for helping the department go through it. I think it would be amiss if I don't thank the Secretary to provide you with wonderful support. And to the Secretary to say thank you very, very much for that. Then obviously I have our wonderful team here, led by the DG and the senior managers here. And what I must say about it is that they've always taken the work of the Portfolio Committee as well as the Select Committee very, very seriously. You don't find just the DG and one individual, you find the entire team. And today was a good example. I was sitting alone out there in cabin, and the entire team was here. And I'm not annoyed about it, but that's the reality, that this is the regard that they have for the Portfolio Committee. And DG was sending me messages worried about it, to say, hey, you know, sorry about support, but we are here in an important event. So I said, just relax, just do your work out there. It's fine, I'll manage there. We did manage over there. But it means that they recognize the value and importance of Parliament in the work that they do. So DG and your entire team, thank you very, very, very much for that. So, Chair, it's really a great pleasure to do so, and I say this on behalf of the Minister, because the Minister might not be here. Generally, she always, if she's available, would come here, but I know how extremely busy she is. And I'm saying that her heart is in the right place, and she does care for the Portfolio Committee. So it's been a wonderful experience. We don't have much time before our term, as it were, the administration comes to an end. It means that we've got to work extremely hard to get what is still to be done for the benefit of the country to be completed by that time, and I look forward to your cooperation. The festive period is upon us, so we wish everybody everything of the best for during the festive period and for the new year, and we just hope and pray that our results for the matric examinations are better than last year, I think it's about all our children across the country, and we keep our fingers crossed and hope for better performance. But I do know that the department has worked very, very hard. The DG has been to each and every province, not him alone, but with his collective team, and many of them are seated out here to motivate, to inspire, and really to promote quality education. So we thank everybody concerned. But I think this is a clear demonstration of how the executive and the legislature could both work together in the best interest of education. And I think if we continue in that vein, education must and will improve. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you very much, Andrew. Thank you very much. I thought it was only men who were emotional. Now we are making all us to be emotional.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, but otherwise, really, it has been so good to work with you. I think the support we have been giving to each other, it was just alarming. Thank you. Let us continue to be this big family in our portfolio committee that we have been, unity and purpose, and we know exactly what it is that we are here for.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you ever so much. I always even share with other chairpersons of the portfolio committees before they go to the portfolio committees to say, when they say, oh, I wish I cannot go to that committee, I say, really, in our committee, it's one thing that we have never experienced.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not buying your eyes, it's something that I've never experienced as a chair of the committee. That warmth, that contribution that we always get, I wish we can continue with this. Thank you ever so much, good people. Happy Christmas to those who are celebrating Christmas. Enjoy your holidays.
I don't know.